Good evening, everyone. In the midst of a turbulent galaxy, you can rely on our program to bring you back to Earth with a bump. Assuming you've got the soul permit, that is. Still serving the rest of their sentences, I have with me tonight, Harry the Teabag Balzac.
Good evening, Rudolph. Good evening, listener.
Wilma Knuckles Fingerdo.
Hello, everyone.
The apology, I'll make you sorry, officer.
Sorry.
Norma the Pan Snockers.
Hello, everyone.
And Lou, it's all my fault, Snockers.
Boobs.
It has been a while, hasn't it, Lou? You've been away, that is. Anyway, I think the listener's been enjoying themselves far too long. No, that didn't sound the way I meant it. I suppose, I'd better get on with the headlines. Eddie Lee Wise goes into hiding to avoid a hiding.
Conflagration consternation after baked cake mistake.
Teeny tiny Tina Terror takes on Lacon.
Booster lag is real drag, say commanders.
Palantir's Palantir refuses to come on stock.
Atrus 5060 appears to have woken from his stupor.
I'm back, and working out what state you've all left Hutton Space in.
And I've got more from the community and their events.
First, this evening, shocking developments in Dastardly Don Antonacci's efforts to make his mark on the historical system of Lave. Last week, we reported that he was attempting to gain access to the inner echelons of the station's administration by any means necessary. Applications were received by Lave Radio under both his real name and a number of dodgy-sounding pseudonyms, including Big Don, Mr. P. Irat, and M. Not a Don. These were given the usual due consideration by our sister station's broadcast team before being filed in the round cabinet under the desk. In retaliation, it appears that the Antonacci has contacted a number of his more dodgy friends and issued a bounty for the head of one Eddie Lee Wise, notable local personality, tailor, and man about Lave. The bounty states that Eddie and Sons, but not his daughters, as the Don is an old-fashioned sort of guy, have a mark on their heads that's worth a few thousand credits for anyone bold enough to apprehend them. We understand that Eddie's wife Barbs and his husband Ken are both under armed guard from private security firm Taylors of Lave, who specialise in close personal protection, putting the boot in, and of course, very, very straight seams. We'd like to reassure commanders that the only crimes that Mr. Wise has ever committed are those against fashion early on in his career, attempting to bring into fashion such notable disasters as the double denim flight suit, braces with everything, and of course steeplejack chic, complete with impact-proof flat cap and donkey jacket.
It was the birthday this week of a very special person. A much-loved and very patient member of our troop. Flossie, like our very own Vantier, is permanently 21. Though, in her case, it's in base 33. Never one to let an occasion slip by, and knowing that the pub was in lockdown, so there was no way out of the house. Robbie, aka Commander Wrongway, decided that he'd dust off his best pinny, unleash his inner Mary Berry, and bake! Bypassing his illegible signature, and demonstrating that he's in no way technical, our own Nadia of the North went straight for the showstopper. Out came the tins. The flour, the sugar, the ostrich eggs, the finest vanilla flown directly from Madagascar, the chocolate hand ground by maidens in Mexico, the pinch of this, the sprinkling of that, the promise of the other. And at least it was done. Wishing he'd thought to assemble it in another room, Wrongway realised that the kitchen wasn't big enough to be able to get in a good view of the entire cake at one glance. From the delicately perfumed gingerbread at the base to provide stability, past the lightest of sponges, filled with champagne buttercream and covered in hundreds of handmade fondant miniatures of Flossie as cherubs, up past the millefeuille layers of crispy, flaky pastry, sandwiched with macaron in a myriad colours, each with a different exotic filling and stenciled with love poetry in Sanskrit. Higher still went the delicate sugar work of glossy ribbons, blown sugar balloons filled with helium that floated past, each with a congratulatory quote from friends at the Pilots Federation, and higher still, the layer of dacquoise, that delicately piped swirl of nutty meringue designed to form a stand for the candles. Flossie stood in the doorway to the kitchen and tried to take it all in, but gave up. Robbie took inspiration from his last Hockney retrospective, took dozens of Polaroid photos and stuck them together in a collage, which he spread over the dining room table to show Flossie what he'd done. The pinnacle, the crowning glory, was a remote control HOTAS, which he pressed into Flossie's trembling hand. "Go on, you know you want to," he said. Flossie grasped the joystick and guided a drone carrying a lit match up to the dizzying heights of the top of the cake and nudged it forward until flame licked at wick. "Now, I don't want anyone to get the impression that we're saying that what followed was in any way at all related to the number of candles involved in the conflagration. Sorry, incident. We're convinced that it was because the cake was so tall that there was no room between the candles, however many, and the smoke detector. Because immediately there was a wailing cry from the ceiling, followed pretty close on by a similar one from a figure on the ground. Fearing for their safety, and knowing he'd be the one that had to repaint the room, Robbie, quick as a flash, went out into the corridor, grabbed the nearest container of water and emptied it over the cake. There was a loud hiss, and fortunately the blaze was extinguished. Robbie and Flossie turned to each other, a mixture of relief and dismay crossing their features as they became aware of a slow tapping sound coming from behind them, which turned out to be the tapping foot of floor mopping guy, whose bucket Robbie had just taken. Now, we don't know which room the floor mopping guy had been working on immediately before this incident, but the cake was reported to have an interesting flavour afterwards. Flossie's kindly brought in a piece for each of us to try, but in the interest of making sure that we all survive to the end of the show, we're keeping that treat for the very end.
After last week's shock exposé by Commander Fosdyke, and no, we don't mean the pictures of commanders in their skimpies that he published all over Galtwit, our reporting team caught up with him to find out the latest on part-time Galnet celebrity and pin-up slash part-time secret agent, Tina. The last we saw Tina, she was pictured relaxing at home with a hot beverage from a dodgy knockoff Hutton mug, though our reporters traced her ongoing movements over subsequent days, meeting some shady types down in a docking bay and buying herself a new uniform. It appears that potentially, in an effort to distract attention away from her fake ones, Hutton mugs that is, she donned a set of official Lacon deck crew overalls and managed to hide amongst the busy docking crews, giving incoming asps a good going over. Shocking pictures have emerged of Tiny Tina of the Agents of Spade running at speed from a departing Type 7, shortly before the ship's cargo had a rapid, unscheduled disassembly of the fiery kind. The ensuing explosion scattered canisters across the docking bay, and it appears on first inspection that they were all filled to the brim with fake Hutton mugs. Was Tina trying to cover up her misdeeds? Is she secretly on a mission from Dog, and the mug in her quarters was part of her investigation? Did she get her Lacon overalls from Buck Naked, formerly of Lacon Spaceways? After all, he never wears them. Or anything, anyway. Early pictures emerging from the scene have shown Tina to be running from the disaster zone with something that looks suspiciously like a detonator in one hand. She has now vanished back into the underworld, and her Galtwood account has been mysteriously silent. But Commander Fosdyke is attempting to track down the rest of the Agents of Spade with his long lens and give us a paparazzi's eye view of what's going on. He has located one more of these secretive characters, who goes by the codename Rita, and his lens has been able to make out a matching tattoo on her that looks suspiciously like the one on Tina. Are these femme fatales in league with the Don and spreading fake muggery across the galaxy? Are they actually trying to stop mods via covert means? Scientific analysis of the wreckage from the Type 7 explosion has concluded that not only do the mugs resemble official Mods Preventing Hutton mugs, they do have warming properties similar to the originals. It appears, though, that they don't use frameshift energies to maintain the temperature of your beverage, but rely on unstable isotopes of radioactive elements. Too many mugs, too close together, and the result, without state-suitable shielding, is an explosion of devastating proportions, which, coincidentally, is exactly what happened to the hapless Type 7. The Hutton Orbital Police Service, or HOPS for short, have asked for anyone with a fake Hutton mug to dispose of it immediately and safely, and to contact them for further safety information. They've also asked Tina to hand herself in to assist them with their inquiries, which is a euphemism for, we haven't got a clue, but we're going to arrest everyone anyway.
With the latest community goal having come to a close, due to a sterling effort by the Galactic Community, Haxwing and the Anti-Xeno Initiative, a number of commanders have taken to Galactic forums to express their frustration that despite being paid many millions of dollars for their work, the promised Guardian Frameshift Booster has yet to be delivered or even unlocked. It appears that the Pilots Federation underestimated the enthusiasm for these items, as well as woefully underestimating quite what was involved in obtaining quite so many of them in short order. They've sent a number of megaships over to Guardian sites armed with trowels, little brushes and big wheelbarrows to unearth enough Guardian parts to build thousands of the boosters in one large batch. Xeno archaeologists have been working overtime to catalogue their findings and pull out the necessary items, and noting that any sensible engineer worth their salt would just accept a bribe of a few boxes of cigars or maybe a nice Lavian brandy in return for their work. It should be noted that the loudest complainers saying that they haven't had their free stuff yet have actually turned out to have had one already. And the majority of the participants in the community goal are happy to wait on Galactic Second Class posts for their goodies. Backlogs are expected to clear by the end of the week, by which time all that will remain is the queue outside the delivery office of people waving "We're sorry you weren't in" cards and demanding that the items be transferred for free to their nearest station instead.
The illustrious Commander Palantir became entangled in a tricky situation at Eddie Lee Wise's boutique on the parade at Hutton earlier this week. He tried on a new helmet model in preparation for the much-vaunted Walking Around on Planets thing, which is due next year. Our intrepid hero struggled to get the aforementioned helmet onto his dome until finally he had to be assisted by one of Mr. Wise's sons and his daughters and a mallet. Once on, he complained that it was a bit snug, despite all the attending staff commenting on how well it suited him. He declined Mr. Wise Jr.'s suggestion that he wear it out of the shop, and instead asked if his helmet could be removed due to the incredible pressure on his skull, and as his nose was now blocking the view from his left eye. There followed an impassioned and sustained attempt to remove the offending item of headjoy from Palantir's Palantir, with the Wise brothers pulling at the hapless commander's legs, while the Wise sisters focused on his helmet. In the end, not even Mr. Wise Sr.'s attempts to loosen it up with blowtorch could shift the crushing head protector, and only succeeded in singeing the prisoner's ostentatious ear hair, filling the limited space inside with the smell of burning hair, which in turn led to a sneezing fit. Finally, after a trip to the infirmary, Nurse Wyeth was able to use medical grade butter to remove the Palantir from his confinement, to the accompaniment of a loud popping noise and 3 pints of sinus fluid splashing onto the infirmary floor. Commander Palantir has since been diagnosed with having a massive head, described by Nurse Wyeth as looking like a snowball on a toothpick. He has also been directed to buy future head coverings from the Big and Pretty section.
Good evening, trackers. Atrus 5060 reporting with all the latest on all things Thargoids. I am happy to report that the Thargoid assault on the Witch Head Nebula, it's been terrible, has been thwarted. Hooray! It was so lovely seeing Haxwing back in action alongside the AXI, or is that AXI, and other anti-Xeno groups. Local citizens have been sending out thank you messages across all frequencies, though somehow those pesky wedding barge communications are still getting through all of that noise. It's absolutely amazing how someone is admitting on an open frequency how they haven't written their vows. Anyway, I digress. Humanity is saved once again, all thanks to the valiant efforts of you truckers, and of course the independent commanders. Carriers have already begun the journey back to the bubble, so if you need a lift, be sure to dock up before they all leave. Though, to be careful, I once made the mistake of not checking the destination manifest and ended up 25,000 light years away from the bubble. Anyway, thank you again to all the truckers for all the hard work. I'm off to the Pleiades to continue prodding the Eagle Eye installations to see if they will ever update. Good luck out there, truckers. For the mug.
Happy quarter century to Alvin. Not his age, of course. The number of systems under his control. Well, almost. More on that in a moment. The LPs, the Wolfs, the Epsilons, George's Pants, Home, all looking nice and stable. Influence is about where we want it, and no obvious threats from anyone. Keep your eyes peeled for posts from custodians or messages in the helper for individual systems, but apart from that, all is well. All? Not quite. Wise 0855-0714 is too high. Much too high. About 20% too high, really. So, if you'd be so kind, go and nudge us down a little. Shouldn't be too hard, it's a tiny system, fairly easy to sort out. On the other hand, we've seen a rapid rise in PSPF-LF2, and unchecked, that could go above 70% quite quickly. And the last thing Lael needs is expanding piss flaps, so, Rincewind Cymru, if you're listening, gather some minions and sort it out. Otherwise I'll send Albin after you. Over in Colonia, it's rather boring, I'm afraid. I did try and read Hanky's brief, but the only exciting bit turned out to be a typo. We've not dropped 3,500% in Deriso after all. We're heading towards an election in Tyr, but that's hardly news, is it? Back in the real galaxy, as I'm sure you're all aware, we have moved into Narnia or Nonsense or Narensis or somewhere, and that means we have a system that we don't control. Snuggles has checked it all out. And aside from taking control from the Narensis organisation, there's a shiny orbital facility we can win. So, the orders are, gloves off, truckers, hammer that influence and head for the top, bulldozing any opposition in the way. All hail Alvin. Over to Norma.
After last week's huge list of forthcoming events, there's not a lot that's new this week, but we have some updates. Preparations for Speedball 4, bit.ly/SB4forum, note the capital F for forum, which will be on the 21st and 22nd of November, are going ahead. There are now at least 4 carriers in the system supporting the training efforts. Yes, people train for these things. They're not all like you, you know. You know who you are. Current runs top out at around 3,600 metres per second, posted by Phobia, which is still a good deal slower than the theoretical maximum speed. Sadly, no one has dared do training runs with the more outrageous ships. Only Commander Iceman Asbo 27 did a safety run in his Corvette, buzzing the hilltops at around 3,300 metres a second. The Lithobrit carrier is the official carrier, staying in system the entire time, providing repairs, shipyard for transfers and outfitting, including module transfer. No shop or UC though. Operation Wolf Hunt is still on pause, so efforts have been concentrated on Marines this week. And here's a new one. The Titan contractors are launching Trip Epsilon, visiting the Generation ships each Saturday. Details at bit.ly/TripEpsilon. #TripEpsilon and on their Discord channel. This is open to everyone. If you want to get involved and explore the Generation ships, You have two more days to dock with the TOC Solaris or TOC Tiger in Ross 104. We'll bring you more updates on events as the start gets closer. And of course, if you know of any events you'd like us to feature, just get in touch.